Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. On Sunday, Democratic Senator Joe Manchin went on Fox to say that he will not support the Democrats' climate and social spending bill. On yesterday's show, we talked about what this means for the climate crisis. Today, we'll find out what this means for all of the social programs in the bill, and there are so many. It would fund universal pre-K. There's a provision that would require Medicare to negotiate drug prices and cover hearing aids. $65 billion would be set aside to repair public housing buildings. There's money for low-income families to buy food. There's an extension of the child tax credit, and so much more. Senator Manchin's refusal to support the bill likely means that December's child tax credit payment will be the final one for the 36 million households that have been receiving the benefits since July. Without an extension, nearly 10 million children are at risk of falling back into poverty or slipping even deeper into poverty, according to the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. Today's guest, HuffPost reporter Arthur Delaney and his colleague Tara Golshan, reported that in recent months, Senator Manchin has told several of his fellow Democrats that he thought parents would waste monthly child tax credit payments on drugs instead of providing for their children, according to two sources familiar with his comments. They report that Senator Manchin's comments shocked several senators who saw it as an unfair assault on his own constituents and those struggling to raise children in poverty. Low-income households that receive the credit say they're spending the money mostly on necessities like food, utilities, clothing, and school supplies. This is according to the Census Bureau. Joining us now is Arthur Delaney, a HuffPost reporter who's done extensive reporting on the bill and the child tax credit. Hi, Arthur. Thanks so much for joining us again.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
Well, great to have you back. These really nasty comments are getting so much attention. How insulting, because Arthur, you've done so many interviews with parents who say, this is just helping us get by. We're buying food, we're buying school supplies, we're paying for the rent. So tell us more about these comments and what are the actual facts?
Yeah, a lot of parents have told me that the extra money just makes their lives a little bit easier, a little bit better, a little bit less stressful, and not having the money will make their lives a little worse and a little more stressful. And that's the situation they're facing starting next month. As for the facts, it's like you said, you know, the Census Bureau is actually asking people how they're using the money, and it's mostly basic stuff like food, utilities, rent, paying down credit card debt, and paying for school supplies. That doesn't mean there's no parent out there wasting the money on drugs. I mean, I'm sure someone has done that, but that's not. There's no reason to believe that that's actually what's resulting from this policy. What Manchin is saying is basically he doesn't want to give people money, and he's using a really old school conservative talking point about welfare in order to make his point. This is something that Republicans and even a lot of Democrats said about giving poor people money for decades. And it's like a muscle memory in American politics. And it had seems like with the coronavirus pandemic and all those stimulus checks that Washington was moving on from that. But Manchin's remarks in private, he doesn't say this in public, but his private remarks show that our politics has not really changed so much.
And also, Arthur, just give us a sense of the numbers we're talking about here. Again, the payment, as you report, in December will be the final one for the 36 million households that are receiving these benefits. And according to the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, without an extension, nearly 10 million children are at risk of falling back into poverty. And we know that those numbers are pretty low. I'm talking about the financial numbers, not the 10 million, but the dollar amount. I mean, people are really trying to get by on very, very little right now.
It's $300 per month per child under six and $250 per child under 18. And this money is going not just to poor people, but basically everybody with kids, except for people whose incomes, whose household incomes are above $150,000 a year. That's where the money, the checks begin to dwindle in size. And that is the vast majority of households in the U.S. That's 90% of American households with children. So it's a near universal child allowance along the lines of what has existed in other economically advanced countries for decades. So yes, there will be this effect on poverty with several million kids having a poorer life in the month of January, but also it's just money vanishing for lots of middle-class households. And so it will be interesting to see if there is any political backlash for this. So far, no one has really been able to argue that this is as popular as Social Security, like Democrats had envisioned it. But it does seem like a major consequential economic event that people, $15 billion going out every month to like every family in America suddenly stops. What will the consequences be? I don't know. Except right. that there will be more poverty.
Right. More poverty and more suffering. And what a time to announce this the week of Christmas. Let's just hear from one person who's benefiting from this. I think it's so important to note that a lot of grandparents are also raising their grandchildren. CNBC reported on grandmothers who've been rallying to save these benefits. And in this clip, we will meet Mary Beth Cochran. She's a 52-year-old North Carolina grandmother who's taking care of two of her grandkids full-time. She's getting $500 a month from these benefits. She says it's the first time she's ever been able to afford her own car, which she has to use to take her grandkids to school and to all the activities and everything. So here is Mary Beth Cochran.
I wish that I would not have to rely on these programs to provide for me and my family, but I have to in order to make ends meet. We are everyday people. Please don't look down on us for receiving these programs. Please don't look down on our kids for receiving these programs. We need this extra help.
I mean, Arthur, this is devastating. $500 a month makes such a difference to Mary Beth Cochran, her grandkids, and millions of other people out there. So many people are in her shoes.
It's such a big deal. One thing, though, that we should point out is that they made the tax credit $3,600 a year for each kid that who's younger than six, and $3,000 for kids younger than 18. The monthly payments only started in July. And so what that means is if you were receiving those, even though there will be no payment in January, you should file your taxes. And after you've done that, you can get a refund for the first 6 months of the year in a lump sum. So that would be $1,800 for a kid if you've got a kid younger than six. So that's a big deal. The problem, though, is the IRS won't pay those child tax refunds until mid-February. Mm-hmm. But that's just something, anyone who's listening to this who's worried about losing this money can look forward to it and should file their taxes in order to make sure they get it.
Okay, so be sure to file your taxes and you will get a refund for the first 6 months of the year, but you will not get it until February. Arthur, you're in D.C. You've been reporting on this regularly. What are you hearing about the timing of Manchin's announcement? I mean, the fact that he went on Fox on Sunday to announce this speaks volumes. But the fact that he did this during Christmas week, what are you hearing?
Well, that has more to do with the fact that Democrats set Christmas as their own deadline for getting this done. They wanted it done by the end of the year. But something happened between Manchin and the White House, and we're not exactly sure what. He said in a radio interview yesterday in West Virginia that he was at his wits' end over something the White House had put out, that White House staff had put out. And I thought that this might have been a leaked story to CNN that he wanted the child tax credit cut from the bill entirely. And this is my theory, because when I asked Joe Manchin about that last week, he flipped out and cussed at me and said he was done. And then it was the following Sunday that he made this formal announcement. He has never actually come out and said what he wants with the child tax credit. So I think it was a true story that he wanted to cut, and he's just afraid to detail his opposition in public, because we know what he says behind the scenes, according to some pretty good sources. So I think he was mad that, you know, he's got these friendly talks with Joe Biden, then White House, you know, the White House may have leaked that story about his behind the scenes opposition, but I'm not certain that that's what it was. But there was some sort of breach of decorum that like offended him and hurt his feelings and caused him to finally say, "I've had it. I've been negotiating. I've never supported the bill, but now I'm not even going to negotiate anymore."
I understand he said something to you like, "This is BS. You're BS."
He said, "He said this is BS. You're BS." He didn't say BS, though.
Right.
We're on the radio. We won't
say that. Well, today we're speaking with Arthur Delaney, a HuffPost reporter who's done extensive reporting on the child tax credit and some of the other social provisions in Build Back Better. If you have any questions for Arthur about this specifically, he'll be with us for just over 10 more minutes. Any comments about Senator Manchin saying that he's a no? Honestly, there's so much in this bill that even I didn't even realize. We've been reporting on this for months, Arthur, and I didn't even realize there's funds in there for low-income families to buy food next summer and the summer after. So there's so much in this bill that people really, really need.
There are things that Manchin could possibly agree to. I know he said he was done with Build Back Better, but he also reportedly made the White House an offer to do a bill with several of the main programs from Build Back Better, but to do them differently. Instead of having universal pre-kindergarten for just a few years, which is what the amount of funding Democrats allocated in Build Back Better, they would do it for the full 10 that they consider the normal budget timeline. But that proposal omitted the child tax credit, and I think it's basically a non-starter. But there's the universal pre-K and some the environmental green tax incentives that he was reportedly willing to continue, but it just doesn't seem like he's making an offer that Democrats will accept.
Well, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Arthur, what are some of the other alternatives here? Because you can't do most of these things with an executive action. And then if you tear the... Let's say you take different aspects of Build Back Better and then have, let's say, five different bills. At that point, because it's not a reconciliation bill, you would need Republican support, right?
They have to, right. If they want to pass any of this, they have to do reconciliation, because Republicans won't support this in the way that Democrats want it to. There is some Republican talk of a child benefit, but they would, for example, want to exclude unemployed parents. And, you know, then your poverty reduction just goes out the window. So Democrats need to do a bill themselves if they want to do any of these items. It's hard to imagine they wouldn't just figure out what Manchin can support and take what they can get. But the trouble with omitting the child tax credit and just doing pre-K, green tax incentives in Obamacare funding, this was the Manchin's reported offer to the White House, is most of that stuff doesn't kick in next year. They want to have something that they can campaign on. They want to be able to say, look, this bill is immediately benefiting people directly in 2022. So if they just do kindergarten and it doesn't kick in for several years and half the states just say no to it because they're led by Republicans, I don't think Democrats would view that as ideal. So it's a total mess right now, and they don't have a plan. There's no alternative that Democrats have started talking about. The majority leader, Chuck Schumer, has said they're still going to have a vote on Build Back Better just to make Joe Manchin say no on the Senate floor. There's no other plan right now. It's pretty grim.
It's pretty grim. And also what that would do is basically force the Republicans to also vote no, because we've had you on so many times, Arthur, and they've just been sitting back probably gleefully watching all of this. Not one Republican senator supports Build Back Better. And I know that listeners know this, but we should repeat it. Because the Senate is evenly split, the Dems need all 50 senators to vote yes, plus a tiebreaker from Vice President Kamala Harris. Arthur, are you seeing the media, you know, have given so much attention to Joe Manchin, but I'm wondering, have you or have other reporters been able to ask Republicans why they're not supporting Build Back Better? Or are they just saying it's like a socialist bill? It's basically what we hear from them.
They call it socialism, but they say it's government spending at a time where inflation is a legitimate concern. I think economists would say the vast majority of the spending in this bill doesn't even happen in 2022. You know, it's not like stimulus checks, but there is, you know, they could credibly complain that the child tax credit payments are inflationary because, you know, it reduces poverty and poor people have money to spend on goods and services. But they haven't said much. I mean, they're sort of standing aside and watching Democrats fight among themselves, and they're rooting for Joe Manchin. They love what Joe Manchin's doing, and they've been courting Joe Manchin. There's been speculation that he would even switch parties. And what he said yesterday was just, well, you know, as long as I would like to remain a Democrat if the Democrats will have me, which was a striking comment. I mean, it does seem like there's bad blood now between Joe Manchin and everybody else. Nobody was making mean statements about him. Well, I mean, some people were, but for example, Pramila Jayapal, the leader of the House Progressives, totally diplomatic toward Joe Manchin for the past like 5 months. Yesterday, she came out and said he's basically a liar, that he went back on his word. So things have broken down in a bad way.
Hmm. Yeah, what are you hearing from progressives? Because I mean, they're thinking all along, their strategy all along is that you needed to pass the infrastructure bill simultaneously with Build Back Better, because they warned if we pass infrastructure, they're going to kill Build Back Better, and we need both. So what are you hearing from progressives?
There's a little bit of an I told you so coming from the Squad, which is the small group of progressives such as Rashida Tlaib and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. But for the most part, Pramila Jayapal is the leader of the Progressive Caucus, which has nearly 100 members, a huge faction in the House. And even though they clearly have been burned, she said yesterday, we don't regret it. You know, this is the only way we could have done this. Remember, Nancy Pelosi put the screws on them and, a lot of pressure to support that infrastructure bill, which they've been holding hostage. And they relented after the Virginia gubernatorial election. So I think it was they caved at a tough moment, and it's clear their strategy hasn't paid off. But Jayapal believes they couldn't have done this any better. It seems like what she wants to say is our big problem here is Joe Manchin, and he went back on his word. They feel betrayed. And they're at a stage where they're merely blaming him, and there's no clear path forward.
Today, we're speaking with Arthur Delaney, a reporter with HuffPost who's been extensively covering Build Back Better and the child tax credit. We have a couple calls about Joe Manchin. Let's hear from Raul in Daly City. Hi, Raul. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you for letting me speak. And I think that Senator Manchin has given a gift to the Democrats for the upcoming elections. If they actually use the gift they're being handed, if they challenge in town hall, in the media, Manchin and the Republicans, why they're denying. If they just speak on what is important to you, the public, this is something that you want because we cannot get it without your support. Instead of finger pointing and saying, whoa, the Republicans have us, let's run behind a rock and see if maybe in another 4 years we can shake them into giving us mercy.
Wow, Raul, well, that is a very positive twist on what we're hearing right now. Arthur, what are your thoughts on this? I mean, what I'm hearing How this is kind of being spun by some people is that this is a major Democratic failure. But what Raul says is, you know, what if the Dems hit the campaign trail and say, look, this is what we want to give you, but because of the way the system is set up, we can't unless we have more Democratic senators and we don't lose the House.
I think that's a toughie. I mean, yeah. Joe Manchin himself has said, you know, if you want to enact this agenda, you need more Democrats. The problem is, like you said, they did just win the last election, that it, giving them control of the White House and both chambers of Congress, and they haven't been able to get this bill done. So there is, you could say that if the various policies become an election issue, that would make them more salient in voters' minds. I did do a story about how, you know, if Democrats had passed Build Back Better, the child tax credit would be expiring again this time next year, and how that would be a potentially potent thing for them to say to voters, look, if you want this money to keep flowing to your family, you have to elect us again. But they're already having a problem keeping that money flowing, and they're in control now. So I don't know if it works. I mean, with, given the way Congress is set up with structural advantages to Republicans and rural areas, I don't think it's going to work.
Well, and so many of these policies are so popular. I mean, especially at a time when so many people are struggling to make ends meet. Other provisions that haven't gotten that much attention, but like health insurance policies would be reduced, and they're constantly going up. In-home and community-based services to ensure that elders and people with disabilities can get the care and the support that they need is in this bill. It would support home health aides. And we know that over the next decade, just in West Virginia, according to American Progress, they're going to need more than about 30,000 of these jobs. That's just in a small state. And then you've got, let's see, their weekly childcare costs would drastically decrease. I mean, there's so much in this, Arthur, that is popular across the country, even among Republicans.
It's popular when a pollster tells them about it and says, do you like this, yes or no? But does that popularity, when you're responding to a survey question, translate to you going out and then voting for Democrats? And I don't. There's a disconnect there between the popularity of given proposals in survey questions and what voters do when they're in the voting booth on election day. And it's, I think it's difficult for Democrats to convince people that voting for them results in these popular policies happening, especially when there's so many of them. And a lot of them are really complicated, like the child care thing in Build Back Better. It has got somewhat complex formulas for eligibility and the amount of subsidy that you would get. So I think it's a tough sell, actually.
Do you think it's because there's so much in it, or is it because we receive sound bites mostly now? I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
There being so much in it does make it hard. It makes it hard to describe in a news story. I mean, their simple line about childcare is you won't pay more than 7% of your income on this, but it won't start next year unless you are beneath 100% of the state median income where you live, and that threshold will rise to 150% the following year. And this all hinges on the state actually participating in the program, and you've got now Republican states that have already said they would not even do universal pre-kindergarten. I mean, they've got a universal pre-K thing as a major part of this at a time when Republicans think claiming that Democrats are trying to control, you know, brainwash your children is their number one election message. So it's a problem for implementation. I think the child tax credit is the simplest and easiest thing to understand. But if I were running for Congress, I would want that money going out there rather than just saying, well, it would be going out there if you had voted for more of me.
You know, Arthur, talking about universal pre-K and Republicans refusing to implement it, you just reminded me of Medicaid expansion. And that's another very important part of this bill. It would finally provide Medicaid to people mostly in the South who do not have it because their Republican governors have refused to expand it. So what will happen with that now? Do you know?
Well, it just won't happen. If they don't pass a bill, that won't happen. And there was an argument within the party about whether they should do that or whether they should do what Bernie Sanders recommended, which was to expand Medicare, which benefits older Americans who might be more likely to vote. But, you know, if they don't have a bill, they're not going to do anything. I think they'll have to figure something out, though, because they won't want to present themselves to voters next year totally empty handed.
Right. Well, and after the break, we're going to talk more about what is coming for Medicare now? What does this all mean? Because Medicare was going to negotiate drug prices. Insulin was getting so much media attention. And then it would also cover hearing aids, not dental and not eyeglasses. There's actually a piece in Kaiser Health News, West Virginia Senator Manchin takes the teeth out of Democrats' plan for seniors' dental care. So we're going to talk about that after a break. But let's take one more call. Can you stick with us for a few more minutes, Arthur?
Sure.
Okay, great. Let's hear from Greg in Palo Alto. Hi, Greg. Thanks for holding.
Yeah, thank you. First of all, what's amazing to me is that Manchin and Sinema are perfectly willing, it seems, to jeopardize the Democratic chances of retaining the House and the Senate in 2022 and maybe the presidency. I can't believe that they're willing to do this. I believe in Sanders. I think just bring the bill to the floor, let them vote on it, the Republicans and the Democrats, see where things stand, and they'll go from there. And that's what they're going to have to campaign on, because if anybody believes that Manchin is going to give them something, what are they going to end up with if they keep compromising with this guy? I mean, what's he going to agree to? I mean, what he's going to agree to is going to be so egregiously small. How are you going to campaign on that in 2022? I wouldn't trust this guy. I agree with them. They let him, the Democrats, let themselves get jerked around, especially in the House, by this guy instead of just passing the legislation, sending it to the Senate, and let them vote on it. And that's it. And that's what Sanders is saying now. Mm-hmm. And I agree with him totally. So, these people are despicable. Thanks.
Arthur, what are your thoughts? What are you hearing from Dems about that point?
Well, I don't think Joe Manchin will have a problem voting it down after he said that's what he'd do. He is a Democratic senator who won by 3 points in a state that voted for Trump by like 20, 40 points, you know, some huge margin. And it's easy for him to go against his party because that's how he wins. And if he decides to run again, he'll be up in 2024, so pretty soon. So he's sort of, you know, he has said he wants to make Joe Biden a successful president, but he also wants to make Joe Manchin a successful senator. So he's got to balance those interests. And if he thinks Build Back Better is inflationary or too socialist, then he's going to vote against it. I don't think that he'll be really scared of saying no in front of Bernie Sanders.
Arthur Delaney is a reporter for HuffPost, where he's been covering Build Back Better and the child tax credit. Arthur, thank you so much for your great reporting this year, and thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, and thanks for the callers.
Thank you. Coming up after a quick break, we will talk about what this means for the future of Medicare expansion. The House bill would have required Medicare to negotiate drug prices and finally cover hearing aids, but not dental and not eyeglasses. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. If you missed yesterday's show about what Manchin's announcement means for the climate crisis, you can find it at yourcallradio.org. Now we are going to find out what this means for Medicare. Social Security Works had very strong words for Senator Manchin after he made the announcement. Social Security Works' mission is to protect and improve the economic security of disadvantaged and at-risk populations and maintain Social Security as a vehicle of social social justice. Executive Director Alex Lawson said Senator Manchin wants to force West Virginian seniors to live in nursing homes where COVID is rampant instead of aging in their own homes. He wants to deny West Virginia seniors hearing aids. Those are not the words Manchin spoke, but by announcing his opposition to the Build Back Better Act, which would lower drug prices, fund home care, and expand Medicare, that is exactly what he said. And Executive Director Alex Lawson joins us to talk about what's next. Hi, Alex. Thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Well, this is such a huge blow because Medicare really needs to be expanded. First off, let's talk about what this means for Medicare's ability to negotiate drug prices. This one almost went down with conservative Dems on the House side, but Democrats worked really hard to make sure that it stayed in the bill. So let's talk about what it took to ensure that that stayed in the bill.
Oh, everything we've got.
Yeah,
it was a hard fight. You know, this is one where basically if the pharmaceutical corporations lose on this, then their whole myth is popped, right? They lie with billions of dollars saying, oh no, the high prices that you alone pay in the world are necessary. And then people will find out that not only are they not necessary, they are price gouging, right? We will continue to get pharmaceutical drugs. People will just be able to afford them. More people will when we lower the price. So because that's what's at stake for them, and because they have so much money, they just profit just billions and billions of dollars a year. They take a tiny portion of that and they corrupt, the political process. They buy politicians. And we saw that in the House. You know, this is just a straight cash transfer from pharma to these politicians who then get in there and wield a pen for their paymasters in pharma. And the diminishments that happen to our ability to negotiate drug prices in the House version are huge. Pharma won a lot, but they're not satisfied with that. They want to lose not at all. They want to still be able to charge the highest prices in the world to the American people, even after our taxpayer dollars develop the majority of the drugs that are around. And so they'll keep pouring money into Washington, D.C. to protect their monopoly power and allow them to charge whatever they will, whatever they want. I will say, I don't think Build Back Better is dead, though. So I heard just the tail end previously. And I think that Joe Manchin is doing a Joe Manchin thing. This is what he does. He says he's going to vote no. And then, you know, very shortly after that, it was a bigger, there's more drama to it because he did it on Fox News on Sunday. But he then came back and, you know, detailed ways that you could win his vote back. And I don't think that the negotiations on Build Back Better are in any way done. And then very interestingly, Joe Manchin specifically he says he likes Medicare having a larger ability to negotiate drug prices than what came out of the House, which just, you know, confuses things further.
So for people who really need this provision, what's the time frame here? I mean, what are your thoughts about how this could roll out?
So I have this general theory that things either happen at the beginning or the middle of a month. And so it's like, it's not happening at the beginning of January. So it's probably going to happen in the middle of January. But if it doesn't happen then, it'll be the beginning of February. I don't see President Biden or Majority Leader Schumer giving up on Build Back Better, because if they don't deliver Build Back Better, then they lose forever across the board. It's just all loss. So they're going to keep pushing Build Back Better at some, you know, giving Joe Manchin what he wants to get it across the finish line. That's primarily what's going to happen. But even then, if the legislation passes, it could take far too long to deliver on the promise of lower drug prices from that legislation. So we are actively right now pushing the Biden administration to make good on their promise and what the vast majority of Democrats are wanting to happen. You can see it in Build Back Better. They want to lower people's drug prices, and legislatively is just one way of doing it. The executive authority to demand lower drug prices from pharma, otherwise to punish them in a way, is enormous. This is something that Biden could do with the swipe of a pen. And, you know, we're pushing him to do that. And I think that he can do that on a lot of things with executive actions and executive orders. And the time to do that is now. We've spent a year negotiating Build Back Better. And Joe Manchin got everything he wanted. And now he's saying he's at a no. It's time to start rolling out these executive actions. And let Joe Manchin make his decision on the backdrop of that. If he wants to do the things that he wants, you know, like he doesn't want to fight catastrophic climate change. President Biden should fight catastrophic climate change with everything he's got through executive action. That puts the emphasis back on Manchin to get it done legislatively, which is what he claims he wants to do. With executive action, we can deliver lower drug prices to the majority of Americans in a matter of months. Through the legislation, it could take longer than that. And some people, the drugs that they take, won't have their prices lowered, because pharma did win quite a bit of exclusions in the House version. But I will say, there's this huge thing that I don't think a ton of people understand. We can lower the prices through Medicare negotiation, but in what passed out of the House, there's also the fact that prices can't rise faster than the rate of inflation for all drugs. And although inflation right now is, the prices are going up, you know, way too fast, and people are feeling that, drug prices go up 10.5% every single year. So lowering that cost growth is going to be pretty immediately felt by everybody. And then we will have to push to do more on lowering the price of drugs that people are already taking.
Alex, we reported on a handful of moderate Democrats who wrote an op-ed in the Washington Post recently saying we cannot go home and ask our constituents to reelect us unless we lower drug prices. So are you hearing Democrats putting the pressure on President Biden to do this by executive order if it does not happen with Build Back Better?
Yes. And in fact, the Democrats, progressive Democrats, are pushing for him to do more through executive action, even if Build Back Better passes. That in fact, you know, some of the exclusions that pharma carved out, that's not what Joe Biden has been promising people. You know, he's not been promising people, I'm going to lower some people's drug price at a point in the future. He's saying, I'm going to lower people's drug prices now. And the frontliners, the letter that you're referencing, this shows just how corrosive pharma's money is. They try to frame it as if this is an ideological thing, but moderate Democrats are at the front of the line clamoring for lowering drug prices. This is absolutely not a partisan issue. It's not like progressives want lower drug prices and conservatives are like, rip me off harder. It doesn't matter where you go in this country, or if it's a parking lot full of Toyota Priuses or an audience of camo NRA hats. Everyone hates pharma. Everyone hates high drug prices. So this isn't about progressive, moderate, conservative, da, da, da. This is about money. This is about greed. It's a simple story of greed. Corporations are holding people's health and lives hostage to extract enormous profits. They ask people, what are you willing to pay for your life or the life of your child? And the answer to that question is everything I've got and everything I can borrow. And that's where we are today. That's what pharma is doing. And they take a little bit of that ill-gotten gains and they send it on to DC to corrupt the process. This isn't ideology. Moderates, conservatives, doesn't matter. They all hate high drug prices. This is just greed. So that's what we're up against right now, is the enormous corrupting and corrosive money power of the pharmaceutical corporations.
Today, we're joined by Alex Lawson, Executive Director of Social Security Works. Their mission is to maintain Social Security as a vehicle of social justice. If you have any questions or comments specifically on the provision that would finally require Medicare to negotiate drug prices or to cover hearing aids. Again, Bernie Sanders has been fighting to ensure Medicare covers eyeglasses also in dental, which should have happened decades ago, but Manchin stepped in and said no on those. So give us a call, 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. To Alex's point, according to drugwatch.com, in 2021, big pharma profits for prescription drugs are expected to reach a whopping $610 billion, billion with a B. According to CBS, Big Pharma has spent nearly $263 million on lobbying so far. They employ three lobbyists for every member of Congress, according to Open Secrets. And I just want to play one clip to just highlight how this affects people's lives across the country. First off, in March, Senator Sanders had a hearing about high drug prices, and he asked if there are any other major countries on earth that allow companies to charge any price they want other than the United States. Dr. Aaron Kesselheim, a professor at Harvard, said the answer is no. In this clip, a Fox 17 in Michigan reported a story about a family who had no choice but to move from Michigan to Ohio to search for lower drug prices. Three of their kids have type 1 diabetes and need insulin, which costs $660 per month per child. And here is the mother of those children.
It feels unfair when you know something is just behind that counter at the pharmacy, but it's unattainable. It might as well be across the country, because it's just not feasible. You can't afford it.
The family turned to traveling to Canada, but when the borders closed at the start of the pandemic, it became more complicated to get it.
That's kind of really what kind of pushed us to make a decision. We need to find a better way to get the insulin. And in our case, it needed to be better insurance.
So when a job with more predictable insurance came up, the Lockwoods told their eight kids their life would be uprooted.
So nobody was happy about it. And I think everybody was hoping to find a different solution of like, do we really need to do this? You know, is this really important? But I do think we try hard to explain to our kids and our family that everybody gets what they need, not what they want. Yeah. And in this case, this, in our opinion, was a need that our family had.
And again, in Michigan, they had to pay $660 per month per child for insulin. With their new insurance in Ohio, the cost went down to zero. This is just one example of millions, Alex, that people really have to shop around and upend their lives for something like insulin.
Yeah, it's so the insulin cartel is actually amongst a den of thieves and murderers, the worst of the worst. These are three companies that raise the price of insulin in lockstep every single year, which is illegal. You're not allowed to form a cartel and then raise the price of that good together in order to extract as much money as possible. And they're doing it on a substance that is over 100 years old, that is absolutely cost pennies, and that millions of people, 7.4 million people need every day to live. Actually, everyone needs it every day to live, but people with type 1 diabetes can only get it through insulin that they buy and then inject. And these corporations see that as a way of profiting. They know for a fact that if they wanted to, they could give insulin to everybody who needs it for a tiny fraction of what they are charging and still make money. In the U.S., we're paying between 5 and 10 times what other countries are paying with insulin. The cartel is just outrageous in what they do, and they are not sorry. They, you know, every time they get hauled in front of Congress, you know, to justify it or whatever. They can't. They cannot justify it. There is no justification other than that the reason they charge that price is because it's the price where some people die. They ensure that a few people die and they leave all the rest terrified enough to pay whatever it is that they can, that the cartel charges. And if they don't have that money, they borrow that money. If they can't, they beg for other people to help them get the money or to get the insulin. If you go to GoFundMe and you type in insulin, you will see an indictment of the failure of our system right in front of your face. Thousands of people, our medical system, and the fact that we let these corporations charge whatever they want means that thousands, tens of thousands of people are reduced to begging for money in order to ensure that some pharmaceutical executive gets another golden yacht that he can ride on to his other golden yacht or whatever it is they do with all of the obscene profits that they're getting as they try to, you know, make up for the giant hole where their soul should be. And they just pour this blood money into it. If I sound a little strong about this, it's because I want people to recognize that these corporations are killing people. Mm-hmm. They're killing people. And that's what we're talking about when it's when we're saying lowering people's drug prices.
And under Build Back Better, there would be a cap on the price of insulin at $35 per month.
That's right. And we do need to improve it some so that everybody faces that, uninsured, insured, public insurance. And we need to keep working on making that the reality. But that is the goal. That's the goal in the medium term, is to actually make sure that no one pays more than $35. I want to tell you a little secret there, though. Pharma doesn't lose there in this current one. It's way better than status quo because people will not die because they can't afford their insulin. But we didn't lower the price this go round. That was, and you know, this go round is not done yet. But we won't stop until we actually lower the price of insulin to $35, not just what people pay. Because when we do just an out-of-pocket cap, it just spreads the cost around. So we are paying for it with higher premiums as well.
Alex, we're almost out of time, but I just want to ask you another question about how we get out of this mess with, you know, politicians in the pockets of corporations. The New Yorker had a piece about how Senator Manchin was an early member of the American Legislative Exchange Council. In 1993, he moderated a workshop that promised to reveal how, quote, the true demon in our healthcare spending has become our own government programs, Medicare and Medicaid. Panelists included representatives from Big Pharma. They called the AARP a front group. And then Manchin's daughter, years later, Heather Bresch, became the president and CEO of Mylan. The company is facing an antitrust lawsuit alleging that it colluded with Pfizer to eliminate competition for its EpiPen, the price of which rose by several 100% under Manchin's daughter's leadership.
That's all true. It's despicable. Money in politics is despicable, but the key is to not just throw up our hands about it. We need to, the only thing that we can do to fight money power is people power. So they've got money, we've got people, and we need politicians to be more scared of the people than they are of their donors. So what we've seen is a political system that's been entirely captured by the donor class. And we need to change that. And we do have champions working at that. You know, we have Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, we have Pramila Jayapal, and so many others in the House. So we are making progress, but the key is to expose this corruption for exactly what it is. Don't let them get around it by saying it's something it's not. It's payoffs. It's payoffs from corporations so that they're not held accountable for the harms that they are bringing on the American people. And expose it and make it toxic, make politicians run away from it. And if they don't run away from it, then you replace them. Then you go after the Kurt Schraders and you say, we're going to do everything we can to make sure that you never win another election in your life. The Scott Peters, these are two Democrats in the House who stood with pharma. So that is how we beat money in politics until we can actually get money out of politics.
In our final minute, Alex, given that this is going to most likely come back in January, February, once again, I mean, what can people do? You're all Social Security. You're driving a billboard around West Virginia and organizing West Virginia seniors to demand that Manchin work for the voters instead of his corporate donors. What else can people do as this comes back and will most likely be watered down?
Yeah, I mean, you can work with us. We definitely are going to keep fighting forever. SocialSecurityWorks.org. You can go to our website and find out ways to be involved if you're in West Virginia, especially. But we need everybody calling their senators right now and telling them that they can't let up, that they can't just change the page because Joe Manchin is saying no. Senators, Majority Leader Schumer, they can put tremendous pressure on Joe Manchin. And most importantly, President Joe Biden went to the Congressional Progressive Caucus and told them, he promised them that he would get Joe Manchin's vote. And that was taken with good faith. And so Joe Biden has to do literally everything in his power to get the vote of Joe Manchin and pass Build Back Better. And so people can call the White House as well and make sure that they know that if the White House tries to turn the page on Build Back Better, tries to turn the page on negotiating drug prices and expanding Medicare, on building the start of a long-term care system in this country, on starting to tackle the climate crisis, that we will not stand with him at all for that. Raising our voices and making sure politicians know we have their back when they're fighting for what they promised us. But if they try to turn away from it, we will walk away as well, because we're not going to stop fighting for this. So if they stop fighting for it, they're no longer standing with us.
Alex Lawson is Executive Director of Social Security Works. Alex, thank you so much for your really important work, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us. Thanks to Malihe Razazan for producing today's show and Kevin Vance for engineering the show. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.